Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
My name is Keith Schertz. I'm with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh McIntosh. Tosh, it's Star Wars Day.
Whoa, it is.
I'm pretty excited about Star Wars Day. Every review about Episode 8 is that it's going to be fantastic, Tosh. That's what people are saying.
90s on Rotten Tomato. Hey. I feel like the last one was too, and people were a little let down after they got over that.
I enjoyed it. That's, you know, you just go in and you enjoy it. Tosh, what's your craziest prediction for The Last Jedi? I have one. You can think about it, but I'll tell you. Here's mine. This is not going to happen, but it's a fun prediction. In wrestling, pro wrestling, not, you know, the stuff that your son dominates at. At pro wrestling, there's this thing called a double turn. Okay, famously, the best example of this is there was a WrestleMania where Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret the Hitman Hart had a match. Bret the Hitman Hart went to the ring as the good guy. Mm-hmm. The Stone Cold Steve Austin went to the ring as the bad guy. Through their storytelling in that match, Stone Cold Steve Austin left the ring as the good guy, and Bret Hart left the ring as the bad guy. Okay, so they both switched the double turn.
Okay.
Double turn, Rey's bad, Kylo Ren's good.
I don't see it.
No, I said it wasn't going to happen.
That would be a bold prediction.
But it would.
Ren is way too emotional and like this unstable to be good.
No, he'll hone it in. He'll hone it in.
That guy is a funny character to me. Like we have like an emo Darth Vader relative.
I like it.
So.
Yeah. All right. You got a prediction or do you want to just get into BYU stuff?
I don't even know if I am good enough with a timeline to, but I'll try anyway. But let's say that Han Solo reemerges on the dark side. That's the bold prediction.
Han Solo is a force ghost, a dark side force ghost. Wow.
That would turn some heads, wouldn't it?
Talking about good and evil, BYU's playing the University of Utah this weekend. We'll get into that, but real quick, 8 games into the year, 8-2, BYU lost. Basically, they ran into two teams that had like a buzzsaw player, especially Texas Arlington. Kevin Hervey was amazing against BYU. And then they played Colin Sexton over at Alabama, who didn't do that well, but is a freaking awesome player.
Here's what I'll say that gives me hope this season is that BYU, I feel like, has beat every team that we had better players than. And the only two teams we lost to clearly had a better player or players than us. That's what gives me hope this season, because in the past, that's what's been the most mind-numbing, frustrating thing is BYU has absolutely crapped the bed against teams that they were better than. And this year, I feel like we have turned that corner. It's going to be interesting to see if we can maintain that. But I think with our renewed focus on defensive intensity, that's what's making the difference.
Well, I think that that's a fantastic kind of thing to be hopeful about is maybe they don't drop stupid games in the West Coast Conference against Pacific or whoever. You know, West Coast Conference has a lot more like high level coaches in it than ever before. Herb Sendek is in this league. There's reason to believe maybe Damon Stoudemire can coach a little bit at Pacific, and
he's got the name for recruiting and things.
And then I like the guy down at Pepperdine and the guy at San Diego, who I'm disrespecting both of them because I can't remember their names. But the point is there's actually a greater, and of course, Randy Bennett and Mark Few and Dave Rose. So there's a lot of pretty good coaches in the West Coast Conference. So And that's the thing that we talked about in our season preview is you can't blow games, right? You just can't blow games to teams that you shouldn't lose to and make the NCAA tournament.
Correct.
So far they're on track, forgivable losses thus far. So the question is, against the University of Utah, emotional game, okay? Very emotional, and that's kind of what everybody has talked about. That tends to happen with these rivalry games, but because of the cooling off period put in by Larry Krzyzewski, there is this game against Utah, which for me, if you look at KenPom, if you look at sort of the advanced stats and stuff, these teams are very, very close. Just they measure out statistically very close. They are both kind of trajecting to be a fringe bubble team.
And that's why this game is really interesting to me. Of course, because of the rivalry and the years off and things. But even on the fact that I'm not sure on paper or from watching these teams' games, which team has the better athletes, which team is better. Like, I feel like Utah is longer.
Yep. They're better at defense.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the one place where number has shown that they're a little bit better at defense.
But we've got some ball handlers offensively, and I would even throw in Yoli Childs that, you know, that they're going to have tough matchups with too. And so this game from a player standpoint is very intriguing because I'm not sure who has the edge.
Yeah, it's going to be, a fantastic environment, of course. Larry Krzyzewski welcomes back into the rivalry.
That should be fun.
129-128. BYU has a one-game lead in the overall setting of this series.
So what you're telling me is
series.
Historically we are better than Utah.
We are better.
Nice.
One game better. and so, you know, the Cougars will try to extend that to two games. Hopefully Utah does not tie that up. Just a couple things. You know, a lot of the focus on Larry Krzyzewski and the safety first and all that stuff, and that's going to be a lot of fun. The hard hats, the signs, the razzing, the all that stuff. Every foul, the student section is going to chant safety first or that's not safe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All that is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm all for it. Like, razz the life out of that guy, you know? I mean, they should make 80. Somebody should take, like, $80,000 of Monopoly money and just, like throw it, you know, in
That'd
the air.
Be good
That'd
too.
Be funny. Anyway, so all that stuff, like, I embrace it, like, kind of go with that. One of the things that I think that people have forgotten about that whole fiasco was that the guy who lost his composure the most, maybe after Nick Emery. I mean, Nick Emery did punch a guy, but
yes, he lost it the most. But then
lost it also. The next is Larry Krzyzewski,
for sure,
and he went ballistic. And you know, he has the reputation of being this super competitive, kind of hard tack approach.
He was getting fights in his NBA career.
There's so many of them.
Yeah,
it's wild. I don't think they had when he was at Montana, he had a college basketball game against Washington. And in that game, the opposing head coach, the Washington head coach, said, "Well, I don't think the Red Army could have gone out there and fought with Krzyzewski." That tells you like what kind of a guy he was. So it's kind of shocking that he decided to have this cool off period. I don't think that it had to do with safety, and I don't think that it had to do with cooling off and that he felt uncomfortable with the competitiveness. That just doesn't add up to who he is.
What do you think it is?
What it was that Dave Rose didn't suspend Nick Emery, or just did for a game, I believe. It was just one game?
Yeah.
That wasn't enough. So he wasn't happy with the way that Dave Rose legislated his own team.
So he tried to kind of force his hand to punish
he
Rose.
He took whatever move he could do,
yeah.
And that was, well, fine, I'm going to take the game away. Okay? And that's, you know, Dave Rose, people forget this, but Dave Rose was really upset about all this. He said, when we can't have good faith contracts anymore with the University of Utah, we got to make sure that the way we restructure our future contracts is to have $1 million buyouts because we know that they'll run. I mean,
yeah, it was a Bush League
when he got asked about it, Dave Rose said, I don't respect the decision. Okay? So there's some heat between Rose and Kraskowiak, too. So, like, and to me, that was the more interesting place. And it would have been, and really, that's, I don't think that Larry Kraskowiak did all of this to punish Nick Emery, a college kid and stuff. I think he was trying to get after Dave Rose for not legislating in a way that he thought was.
That makes more sense. My other thing is, I think that he just wanted to, which you fans have been trying to do, and if we're honest as BYU fans, I think that it's happened, that they're trying to make a separation of how their school is perceived versus how BYU is perceived athletically. And the best way we fight against that is by beating them. And so by them not playing us for a couple of years, it takes that option away. And so I think that there might have been some – I think it was an emotional decision. But I think that in his mind, he thought that there was some strategy to it as well.
All right. Well, I don't know why a head coach would be busy trying to create distance between them. And, I mean, I guess recruiting, he was losing most of the good in-state recruits. So maybe that was what that was. But whatever the case, a lot of talk about that. Gosh, there hasn't been very much talk about the game itself. So you want to talk about the game itself?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do it. First thing, for the University of Utah, great defending team. They actually play with a higher pace of play this year than BYU, which is kind of nuts, right? I mean, you look at the entire Dave Rose era, and it's like, oh, like we play slower than Utah now.
That's wild.
Like, this is really weird.
It's working.
I mean, they're winning games. It's the longest win streak they've had since, I believe, Tyler Haas was on the team.
Yeah.
So
feels good.
It's been a while since we've been able to win. I believe we're at five in a row. It's been a while since we've won five in a row. One of the things that I wanted to point to was, obviously, Utah, the first guy that you think about when you think Utah basketball is David Collette, the transfer from Utah State. He's a senior. He's experienced, 6'8", 220. And he's kind of, I don't know how to, like, he's a good competitive guy who, you know what he is? He isn't, like, the super athlete. He's the guy that's played at the rec center every day, and he knows all the tricks.
Yeah.
He's got an old man's game, but he still has, like, a big young body. But he knows all the tricks. He'll grab jerseys. He knows how to, you know, push from behind to get the rebounds. He knows how to do those things.
He's the biggest guy out there.
Yeah.
And the thing with him, too, is that I feel like he's been pretty inconsistent. And that's coming from – I haven't watched that many, but for Utah fans, they're like, we absolutely need this to be a game that he shows up.
All right. Well, David Collette, and the strength for me for Utah is that forward line. Basically, you said before the season, I think you're right, is that where BYU can get into a lot of trouble is a team with a lot of multiple bigs that can score.
Yeah.
Well, they have that. Utah has that. So that's scary. Tillman is averaging 10, almost 11 points a game. He is 6'7". He's a power forward, freshman, Detroit, Michigan. Also, you have and Tyler Rawson. He's a 6'9", 215, American Fork High, 10 points a game, 6 boards. So to me, the key here is, and Yoli's been amazing at this, like the speed at which he has learned how to not foul
is incredible.
Has been amazing.
Yeah.
Yoli Childs can't get in foul trouble. He has to be so key for BYU. He has to be on the floor, and especially since they're going to be without Dalton Nixon, you know. So Peyton Dastrup's really going to have to step up and have some big minutes.
Worthington's going to play a lot of minutes, just trying to have a big body on another big body.
And I don't mind what Worthington's done. I actually think in certain lineups he's been very helpful to the team, and actually he scores a little better than
his
I think people
hook,
remember.
His little hook, I don't remember him having that like he does now.
So, but Yoli can't get in foul trouble. Super important. One of the lineups that BYU's really gone to big time more recently is they've gone with Zach Selyus at the four. I'm curious about seeing more of that and see how it works against Utah. Mm-hmm. The key is being able to rain threes if he's going to be at the four, you've really got to stretch the floor and be able to shoot three. So if you're not hitting from outside, well, as a group,
yeah,
you know, if he's playing the four and as a group you don't start hitting him from outside, it's hard to continue to play with them at the four other than to use him as a decoy.
Yeah.
Which he has that, by the way, Tosh. He has that gravitational pull that you see where totally. Where people cheat off and give Yoli a little space.
You got the numbers to back that up. Let's throw him
out
to do
that. Well, actually, so the guy that leads in plus minus individually this year is Zach Zelius.
Which that was surprising to me because he's played okay, but I think that he hasn't got back to his form that he did his freshman year yet, especially from hitting threes. But the fact that I feel like he's shown people what he's capable of, teams, as you said, they gravitate to him and it spaces the floor so much better. And with this new offense that we're running that is a little slower, but it's a lot better ball movement, I feel like with that spacing, we've been able to find open shots, which is made when he's on the floor, we're at our best offensively.
He's plus 75 in 251 minutes this season, Tosh. So that is easily the most efficient of guys that have played multiple minutes. Actually, McKay Cannon has been like unbelievable revelation for this team from the UVU game on. Like he's been wild. He actually has a better plus minus on the season than Jashir Hardnett. He has he's in front of Dalton Nixon. He's in front of Worthington. So
I'm gonna throw another guy out there. We're getting off Utah a little bit, but this is all good stuff here. Elijah Bryant's 3-point percentage this year has been crazy, considering
how bad he was last year.
Yeah, he was like the worst. Wasn't he the worst in all of college basketball for anyone that took that many threes?
Yes, and the second worst 3-point shooting performance, but by a volume 3-point shooter since the 3-point line had been introduced in BYU history.
And then he comes out this year and he's shooting 42% from threes.
It's awesome.
And he's shot more threes than anybody on this team.
He's worked his butt off. Good for him.
That has been huge. We need that to continue.
Had to happen. So hitting some of those outside shots going to be very important for this team. But dealing with all the big guys underneath and kind of handling that, you can take away lineups by inserting Zelius and having Zelius begin to execute from the outside. So the Cougars are going to do that. And really, that is the lineup that Dave Rose is going to have to employ that's going to have to really work and produce is when they have Zach Zelius in and Yoli, and that's their front court. The way that they can neutralize Utah is be able to really score it from the outside. And then the second bit is they still have to be able to rebound.
Yep, and that's been a struggle.
Rebounding's been hard this year a little bit.
That's going to be tough in this game against a longer, taller team because they haven't even rebounded well against teams that they didn't have the height disadvantage on.
So, to me, that's the lineup, the kind of the money lineup that against Utah this, and I'll give you the stats. I'd go McKay Cannon at the one, TJ Hawes, Elijah Bryant, Zach Zelius, Yoli Childs. Plus 15, they've played for 26 minutes and 25 seconds. They've shot 45% from the field and 40% from three. That group in, some significant minutes has been very, effective. If you switch, by the way, that exact same group, but you switch McKay Cannon for Jashir Hardnett, they go from plus 15 to zero, just even, okay? In about equal time, about 3 minutes difference between them. Jashir's gotten three more minutes with that group. Their shooting percentage goes down by 4%, but from three, it drops from 40% to 17.6% as a group. So they're not getting as clean a looks. Or maybe it's just an anomaly, they're not making them. Maybe. But Jashir Hardnett with TJ Haas, Elijah Bryant, Zach Zelius, Yoli Childs, has not been playing winning basketball. They've played heads up, even. They're zero, a plus minus. McKay Cannon, suddenly it's plus 15. So that to me is the big lineup for BYU to potentially really hurt Utah. And so if BYU isn't growing their lead or catching up or whatever with those guys on the floor, we're losing.
Yeah.
We are going to lose. And so that's something for you guys that's very concrete to take a look at and watch for.
Here's what I like about this year's squad is we have got several guys that we can realistically see getting hot and taking over a game. You know, Elijah Bryan, absolutely. Yoey Childs, absolutely.
TJ.
TJ Haws, absolutely. Zelius can get hot from three. McKay Cannon has maybe this is the best he'll have ever played because he never played this well at Weber.
No.
But I would put him on that list at this point. Like, he's someone that I could see just getting hot and changing a game. And so I like that we have that many possible guys to do that. Utah, I don't think has that many. That Colette, yeah, he's their best player. He can do that, but he's very inconsistent.
The guy that you got to watch for, in my opinion, is Gabe Beeler, the senior guard. He only has 8 points a game, but he's shooting, Tosh, this year 52.4% from three.
Yeah,
he's taking
wild.
Four a game. Gabe Beeler, if you don't have a hand on him, you're going to have a long, long night. So,
and since in the modern Utah era, when they have beat us, it's because, if you remember, they start hitting threes right out of the gates, and then we're down 15, down 20, like fast. He's the one that if someone got hot and did that to us, it would be Gabe Beeler shooting, like you said, an incredible 52% from threes this year.
And the point guard, Justin Bibbins, is 41% this year. And is their second leading scorer, 11 points a game, 4 rebounds a game. He's 5'8", Tosh. 5'8".
Jeez.
I don't know if I'd get 4 rebounds a game.
That's
anyway,
impressive.
And then four and a half assists a game for Bibbins. That is the guy to watch on the guard line. We know Cedric Bearfield. We've seen him a couple times. He's tough. He's strong. He's a good competitor. He's mostly a defensive guy, in my opinion. But Justin Bibbins is their offensive guy. He kind of makes it go. He sets the team up. He passes. He kind of does it all, the little guy. And I don't know. Jashir Hardnett will have to match up against Bibbins and see what he can do there.
Person that I think
– or McKay Cannon might be a good one there.
Person that doesn't influence the game. Maybe I'm going to eat crow.
Uh-oh.
But it's going to be interesting just to see if our student section is even aware enough to really give him the business. Christian Papula.
Yeah.
like this is going to be the first time that after he really spurned us in the final hour and really has had a terrible year so far at Utah. I wonder if he'll get in the game, and if he does, what sort of reaction he's going to get.
Well, I think it'll be short bench. Cougars only played 7-man rotation last game. They're already paired it all the way back. So against Weber State, we only played 7 guys, not having Dalton Nixon out there. Really hurts. Mm-hmm. Really hurts this group. Foul trouble is going to be,
because we do not play Peyton Dastrup. Like, McKay Cannon, it's only played for us for 4 games. He's already played double the minutes this year as Peyton Dastrup in a year. Like, even when Nixon got hurt, if that was going to be Dastrup's shot for some minutes, Rose goes to 7 players. Like, I feel like for whatever reason, Rose is only comfortable right now with about 8 players, including Dalton Nixon. And with him out, he's really comfortable with 7.
Thank goodness McKay Cannon got to be eligible.
Yeah, it's very true.
They'd be down to 6. Dastrup might not be very good.
I hope he develops, but I mean, that so far, that's how do you argue against – it's either those two options.
He
is not going to be a great college player, or that we've just got to hope that he develops.
He's -8. He's got the worst plus minus individually of any player on the team this year. So not great for Peyton Dastrup. There are things that he does well, but I don't know why the team tends to lose when he's in. And I don't know why. I can't tell
the
you.
The only exception this year for the Dastrup family, who is, I'm sure, listening.
Yes.
Out of Arizona.
Yeah.
Is against UMass.
Yeah.
Like, he played in the clutch times of UMass when we came back.
He did.
So
there's something there. I don't want to say that he's, like, not good. I'm not there. I'm just saying we might need to have that discussion that this might not happen.
I mean, if we're all being realists, and so far he has not been the recruit that we all thought we were getting.
All right. So, look, Utah can't be a 3-and-D team. You gotta stop them from hitting threes.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you were saying, is they were a 3-and-D team, and when they've beat us the last couple times, It's been because they've been a 3-and-D team. So we've got to take away that, and we can't let them just rain threes on us. I'm so glad Jordan Loveridge isn't there anymore. He dragged me crazy. He was good.
Oh, yeah. He killed us.
But I do think that if you can, you know, yeah, prevent the hot start, you know, keep them from getting very comfortable and all that stuff. But let's just put it this way. If BYU can't beat a Utah team at home where David Collette is their best player, it's one thing, like, when you lost to, like, Pirtle and the other guy that's he was the point guard and now he's in the he's on the Raptors. I'm not going to come up with his name.
I know who you're talking about.
But you know, they had two NBA players last time they came to the Marriott Center and they won.
Yeah.
Barely. So my thing is they don't have, are any of these guys NBA players? I say no.
No.
So, you know,
Collette's not.
No.
And maybe.
Nope.
Maybe Tillman.
Maybe.
He got more consistent, but.
Anyway, Tillman, yeah, and that's the guy, you know, off the bench. Maybe he could have that happen, the freshman. But anyway, stretch four kind of style. Anyway, we'll see what happens, Tosh. Big, big game will count against, you know, this head-to-head at home. If BYU doesn't get this against Utah, this will count against them. This will be a bad resume loss. Because, you know, relatively same range. And so if both of them are on the bubble, if Utah gets a true road victory, Utah moves in front of us.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think that BYU can pull this off. That not a single player on the Utes has played in the Marriott Center. They haven't played in a rough environment this year. This is going to be a whole new environment for them. I think that gives us the edge. I feel like this BYU team, their style of play is going to show up better in big games. You know, when you're really a lot more defensive intensity, a lot better ball movement. I feel like that system can pull you through some emotions and tough moments. And I think BYU wins this one.
I'm with you. I think Dave Rose has been – I think he's so mad about everything that, you know – I think a vengeful Dave Rose is an exciting Dave Rose.
And we had two games circled on this year's calendar that were revenge games. Utah Valley, which we played the best I've seen a BYU team play in years, and this game. And so I hope we see a similar sort of game style from our players.
Can I ask you about that? The best you've seen a BYU team play in years. Are you including the football team and stuff?
Well,
I'm talking
thinking of that, but it's probably true.
Well, I'm talking about intensity level and stuff. I mean, they were ready to compete.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys came out there, and they were ready to work their tails off and fight and fight and fight.
Yeah. They came to play. They were jabbering, but even that, they were playing such a system. There was no selfishness out there. They were all just totally bought in that we are going to run this game plan because – that's what's going to give us the best chance of winning.
That was the best they've looked this year.
Yeah.
I agree with you. All right. I'll say it as well. I think BYU is going to win. And I would love to see them, you know, really put it on them. I mean, wouldn't it be fun?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to win a close one. Why do we always win close ones? Let's just kill them. Yep. That'd be great. I don't know that we can kill them. Do you think we can kill them?
I think we could win by 10 or 10 plus. Yeah, I mean, Utah's two losses this year have been where they've kind of got it handed to them. And so maybe that says something about them. If you can get up big, that they start – that they really hurt themselves.
Yeah, I like that. Big. I like that. Okay, good. Tosh, I'm going to give you just 3 minutes here. Jeff Grimes, new offensive coordinator. Ty Detmer fired out. Not, you know, people were holding on. Maybe he'll be on the staff.
Probably not.
No. I'm just going to say no. That ship has sailed. It's over. Ty Detmer is gone, and we're going to move forward with Jeff Grimes, LSU offensive coordinator. Offensive lineman. Offensive line coach, and he's the new offensive coordinator here. For my money, this was as good as BYU could have expected and could have – brought in. Totally. I mean, that's a significant win for Kalani Sitake, I think.
I love it for a couple things. One, his pedigree, his coaching tree, if you will, of who he's coached under, is as impressive as about anyone in the country. The other reason that I really like it is it shows, it's a statement to me and should be to all fans and the football world that BYU is ready to actually start paying some coaches to be a real program. He was the highest paid O-line coach in the nation, making $600,000 a year. And BYU's never going to release what we paid him, but you got to think that it had to be at least that or more. And so guys don't take pay losses. I really think that maybe there has been some good from that. Maybe this terrible season has shook up the higher ups at BYU and thinking, okay, maybe we need to change some things. Maybe we need to decide if we're going to try to be a real program or not. And I love Grimes for him. And I love what it says that we are ready to bring in some big coaches and pay him some real money.
There's been a couple other developments along with it. Apparently, he's been in for a little bit. It's been kind of like a known secret.
Yeah, because LSU already hired his replacement. So,
We've already seen the UNLV quarterback, Flip, mm-hmm. who he was going to UNLV, and now he's coming to BYU.
Yep.
I wish I had his name. They also,
Stacy.
Yep, that's right. And then the quarterback who's committed at Corner Canyon High School.
Draper, Utah.
And three-star quarterback. He committed to Boise State. He's been there. Decommits yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And it looks like he's probably coming to BYU now. So National Signing Day just around the corner, Tosh.
Yeah.
We didn't have an offensive coordinator for what most people consider kind of the most important time for recruiting.
And we're getting ahead of ourselves because none of this is official, but reading the tea leaves, it looks like Peterson from Snow is a given, that he's going to be on this staff.
Okay.
And it also looks like Aaron Roderick is going to be on the staff. A lot of people are saying as the passing game coordinator, that the one that is, I would give it a 55. I'm giving both those guys an 80% plus chance that they're on the staff.
Okay.
The one that I'm giving 55 to 60, well, not even that. Let's go 51. Fessy Sitake.
Yeah.
It is the coin flip. I think the guys that were on last year's staff that are most likely to be here are Clark and Empey.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that I think are out
Reno.
Are Mahe and Cahoon.
All right.
And so we will see if I'm full of crap or if I'm on, but I'm confident with those picks.
Tosh, I'm going to Lee Corso you on a couple of those names. Not just a couple, just one.
Okay.
Not so fast, my friend.
Let's hear it.
I'm not sure that Paul Peterson's going to happen. That's all I'll say.
We will see. Yeah, because, yeah, there's some reasons I believe that, but that I trust you, and that maybe if I get five out of those six right, I'll still be
content. Well, we'll have to see what happens as everything kind of shapes up. But at the end of the day, the guy at the top, over 20 years of college, you know, football experience, he's everybody wants him. Mac Brown wanted him on his staff. Mm-hmm. You know,
that LSU.
Les Miles, Orgeron.
They tried to keep him. They tried to give him a raise. They tried to keep him, but he said, no, I'm going to BYU.
He's interested in the opportunity to be an offensive coordinator. So no play calling experience is the one setback on him. However, I do think that you couldn't get a guy who has 20 years of D1 experience, including coaching at Power 5 conferences, who also was the offensive coordinator at those schools and called the plays, and now is going to come to BYU. That was just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You were going to have to concede one or the other. Have a guy that was a play caller at a small university or Division II or whatever, but then you bring him in, but he has no D1 experience, or you get a guy with D1 experience who has a bunch of it but has never called plays. You had to pick one or the other. I think they went the right way. And like I said, this is the best possible outcome that they could have hoped for, I think.
For sure. And what I like, if we're going to be real, which I like that you're bringing that up, the risk is that he's never called plays before. What is a given is that he comes in with clout. The players are going to instantly respect him. He's not going to have to earn their respect. His resume and the way that he carries himself is going to earn their respect. And two, from a recruiting standpoint, we've got a lot better story to tell from that if we were bringing in a guy from Snow College or something like that. No offense to anybody at Snow College, but when you bring someone in from LSU, who's been at LSU, who's been at Auburn, who's turned down jobs from Texas, like he when he was the highest paid.
He's at Virginia Tech under Frank Beamer. Like, I mean,
he comes in, he's going to be able to name drop like it's nobody's business.
He's not LDS,
which I think is a good thing.
And I think he's going to use this as
not that I don't want him to get baptized for his salvation, but I think from a BYU program standpoint,
right,
that it is a good thing to have some diversity.
What do you think about staff? What do you think about the criticism about Stepping Stone?
Yeah, that's how we're going to get good coaches. Like, we're not. They are not great assistant coaches if they are content at being an assistant coach at BYU for their whole life.
Doug Scovel was a fantastic offensive mind. He left BYU, you know, yeah. but really helped structure the whole passing culture around BYU anyway. So
if we get two or three good years out of this, guys, and he moves on to a bigger job, I'm high-fiving him on the way out.
God bless him. Thank you for your time. Yeah, no, I'm with you. All right, well, it's exciting. I'll do my quick Snow College take. Shout out to my friend Cade. Cade was dating this girl, and it was going great. She was in Provo and all this stuff. She had just returned from her mission and all this stuff, and her family had a legacy of going to Snow College. They all went. All of her siblings went. Her parents went. Legacy Snow College family.
I didn't know those existed.
And Cade was wanting to get engaged to this girl, and she ended up breaking up with him because if they got engaged, she would be ruining her dream, giving up on her dream to go to Snow College.
So you've held this against Snow College for all these years.
So I've just always thought that was funny.
Now we brought it up on the show, and you thought, this is my chance to... That is hilarious.
I've always thought that was funny. You're getting in the way of my dreams of going to Ephraim, Utah.
That guy dodged a bullet. If her life is that planned out, then it would have been other issues.
All right. Well, maybe so. Thank you for listening to this episode of CougarCast. If you have unbelievable breakup stories, email them to us, cougarcast@gmail.com. We can talk about it. I had a girl break up with me once, Tosh, because I wasn't punctual enough. Mm. I said, why are we breaking up? She said, punctuality.
That is funny.
So, if you've got great breakup stories, cougarcast@gmail.com. That might be fun. Thank you for listening. Take care. Go Cougars.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games, and go Cougars.